She rolls her eyes. I talk in slang, babe. And now you say I'm a child. Now I'm offended. Her fingers go to my mouth and silence me again. Babe is an affectionate term for a partner. Don't your people have words like that? What would you call me? Liz? She smacks my chest. Like a pet name. A nickname that one says out of affection. I think for a moment. Woman? She makes an exasperated sound. You know what? Never mind. Just forget. But now I understand what she is asking. My woman? I murmur, tilting her head toward me and brushing my lips over the fine line of her jaw. My Liz? I feel a little shiver ripple all through her body, and she quakes deep inside her cot. Oh, God, you are hard again, aren't you? I can feel you. Her queeth thrums and resonates louder, and I am encouraged. What other things do humans do for foreplay? I lick her skin at the spot where her lip meets the little divot below her tiny human nose. It's soft. So soft. She sighs softly in my arms and her eyes close. Kissing is a good one. Stroking. Soft touches. Caresses. Ah, so I have been foreplaying her before. I just did not know the word. I would foreplay you now, Liz. I want your cunt ready for my cock to fill once more. You're already inside me, so we've got that part down, she says, but she squirms a little against me, as if the reminder of my body buried inside hers is making her fidgety. My hand is still twined in her hair, and I like that I have her pinned in place. I can tell she likes it, too. Her breath is starting to come in soft, rapid gasps, and when she opens her eyes to gaze at me, she has a sleepy, aroused look in them. I will foreplay her now, then. She wants kisses. I can give her kisses. It is the mating of the mouth that humans like so much, and that Vectal spoke highly of. I enjoyed it before, too. Liz's mouth is as soft and smooth as her cunt. So I brush my lips over hers, and when her mouth parts for me, I slick my tongue against hers, like stroking my cock deep inside her. She gasps and moans in response. I like this. No, I decide. I crave this. My mate is finally in my arms, letting me claim her. There is nothing better in the world. I have never experienced the like, and I intend on being greedy with her. My mouth takes hers over and over again until she is gasping and trembling underneath me. I lick her full pink bottom lip with my tongue and then gently bite down on it because it is soft and sweet and reminds me of her lovely cunt. A soft little cry escapes her and I feel her cunt tremble and clench around my cock, even as her pupils dilate and she stiffens under me. I slick my tongue over her parted mouth again. Did I foreplay you correctly? I think I just came again. She sighs, a glazed look in her eyes. Do you wish for me to stop? God, no. That hazy look focuses on my face, and I feel her roll her hips under me. I feel incredible. It is the queen, I tell her, and press my hand between her breasts. We have acceded to its wishes, and now it rewards us. Yay, cootie. She lifts her chin, a subtle suggestion that I kiss her again. I am happy to do so, even as my hand moves to cup her breast. Her human chest is shivering with the force of the qui vibrating inside it, and her nipples are taut and erect. I graze my hand over them, and she cries out again, her eyes closing. Ah, more foreplays. Shall I put my mouth here? The look she gives me is dazed but hungry. I'm down for that. I pause. Is that the... Yes? Boobs now, she says, pushing my head down toward her breasts. Talk later. I move lower as she demands, and my cock slides out of her wet warmth. She makes a small noise of dismay, but I will return there soon enough. As she says, boobs now. I capture her soft nipple in my mouth. She gasps and squirms under me, practically coming off the furs with her need. Ah, I like this. I flick my tongue over the tip, enjoying her cries. Liz moans and her hands go to my hair, my remaining horn, and she clings to me, desperate. She likes this very much. My cock aches, wanting to be back inside of her wet warmth. I'm unable to resist touching her, my hand sliding to her cunt and toying with the soft, wet folds there. She is slick between her legs, my seed and hers mingled together, and she moans when I push my fingers inside her again. That's not enough, she says. I bite gently on the tip of her breast. My fingers? We can play find the G-spot later, she says. More nonsense human language. I want you back inside me, Rosh. I ache for you, please. My cock surges, but I'm not done playing with her yet. I'm still exploring my sweet, soft mate, no matter how much she protests. I gaze down at my fingers as they pump in and out of her cunt, and the dripple of my spend trails down her folds. Automatically, I catch it with my fingers and push it back inside her. I will take her so many times that we will make a child together. And then when her belly is rounded with our mating, we will return to my people and no one will be able to take her from me. What are you doing? She shifts against me, restless. I am ensuring that my seed stays inside you. How very barbaric of you, she murmurs. Her legs part a bit wider and she sighs. You know what would put even more of your seed inside me? What, if you fuck me again? Liz gives a little wiggle. Cut out the middleman and go directly to the source. Again, some of her words make no sense, but it doesn't matter. She is demanding more sex, and that is all I need to know. My qui resonates hard, insisting I take her again. And how can I refuse when she asks so sweetly? I slide back up her body and kiss her mouth, and she whimpers and clings to me. Her hips rise again, and so I fit my cock at her entrance once more, dragging the head of it through her wetness. Oh, God, yes, she moans, and her hands fist in my hair again. Give it to me. I sink home, and she shrieks with joy. My eyes nearly roll back in my head with pleasure. There is no sensation like the warm grip of my mate's cunt tight around my cock. And as I begin to push into her with rhythmic thrusts, one thought cycles through my mind, over and over, resonating as my qui does. Liz is mine. Liz is mine. My mate. My everything.
Liz. Sometime in the early morning hours, I wake up with my cheek pressed to Rahash's chest, drooling on him a little. Oops. I sit up and wipe my mouth and then his bare skin, but he only shifts in the bed and pulls me against him once more. Gotta pee, I tell him sleepily and slide out of bed. I waddle out to the lip of the cave to do my dirty business, waddle being the important word there. I've been fucked so hard and so often in the last night that I'm surprised my legs are even functioning. Now I see why Georgie was totally cool with Vecdal claiming her as his mate. If he's anything like Rahash, he dicked the brains right out of her. I feel pretty brainless and giddy myself. I mean, I've had sex before, but sex with Rahash? It's kind of sex with capital letters and little hearts drawn around it. That shit was incredible. I feel sticky and battered all over, but I'm dopey with endorphins and pleased as punch. I rub a little snow over my aching girl parts to clean up, and then smooth a few more handfuls over my sweat-sticky skin to clean it off. Then, yawning, I head back into the cave. He's awake now, sitting up amidst the furs and watching me with a predatory look that makes my cootie start to hum again. I don't know that I can stand another round of fucking without melting into a boneless little puddle, so I primly sit near the fire, legs tightly locked together, and stir the coals with a stick.
Come back to bed, he says and pats the furs.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he doesn't have sleeping in mind. It's almost dawn, I say. I have a lot to do today.
It can wait.
You know, you sure do have a lot of energy for a dude that had a gajillion broken bones just last week. He lifts one of his arms, and for a moment I almost think he's going to flex. But he only examines it and shrugs.
The qui helps us heal faster.
He looks over at me again and then pats the furs.
Come back. I would fill you with my seed again.
My stupid cootie starts humming like an idiot, but I ignore it. How about we, you know, chat about what comes next? He tilts his head and gives me a curious look.
Why?
I sputter. What do you mean, why? Because we're building a relationship here. Rahash's eyes narrow at me in that way that tells me he thinks he's being patient, but he's really not.
I do not see that there is anything to discuss. You are my mate. You belong to me.
I sputter again. So we're back to property now? There goes my post-coital afterglow. I get to my feet and head for my clothes. You know what? I don't want to talk to you right now.
What are you doing?
Getting dressed. I need to check my traps. He gets to his feet and snatches my clothing from my hand.
You cannot go hunting. Even now, you might be carrying my child. Our child.
Oh, no, he did not just throw the barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen thing in my face. You really want to see my head explode, don't you? He frowns.
I would never wish harm on you.
Ah! I throw my hands up. Fine. You want to be like this? I jab a finger into his chest, which stings because the damn thing is plated. Nothing has changed between us other than a little rompy-pompy. We had sex, that's it. I did not become your magical property, and you did not magically become my man. We are the same as we ever were, which means we are two jerks who like to bicker with each other. My hunting skills have not been affected by your jizz. I know it's dangerous out there. Remember the part where I dragged your broken body for like 3 goddamn miles in the snow? His arms cross over his chest. Yeah, I thought so. I gesture at the cave mouth. So now I'm going to go out and catch us breakfast. You can sit in here and like beat your chest like a caveman or something. I move to pick up my bow and he catches it before I can sling it over my shoulder. I glare furiously at him. When he speaks, Rahash's voice is low and serious.
Before you arrived here in this world, I had nothing to live for. I hunted. I existed. I did not look forward to anything. But now you are here, and you might be carrying my child even now.
His jaw flexes.
I know you are more than capable. The problem is not with you. It is with me. This world is dangerous, and I think of you alone out in the wild, and it is more than I can bear.
He stares at me for so long and so hard that I think his jaw is going to snap from grinding his teeth.
If I lose you, he finally says gruffly, I have nothing.
And because I'm a total marshmallow, I soften. I reach up to pat his cheek, but he leans into my touch and it turns into a caress. Rahash, seriously, I know how to take care of myself.
So do I. I was still downed by a band of Metlaks.
He's got a good point. So come with me. We can hunt together. I nod at him. If you're feeling up to it.
I have a better idea.
He murmurs and pulls the bow out of my hands.
We eat the smoked meat. You come back to bed and let me fill your soft cunt with my hard cock.
His arms go around my waist and he drags me against him. The moment we touch, our cooties start to resonate.
And then we will go hunting tomorrow. Together.
It's hard to stay mad at a guy when he strokes your skin and makes you prickle all over with desire. I consider for a moment. My traps? He glances out at the entrance to the cave.
It is snowing. Whatever is in them will stay frozen another day.
I pretend to consider. There's really no considering to be done. My cootie's going a mile a minute, and I can tell I'm already wet between my legs with need. I look up at him. If we're going to be mates...
There is no if. We are,
he insists. Then we need to be equal partners, I tell him. I brush my hand over his gorgeous, naked chest and then move up to his neck, caressing the back of it. There's no ownership. You are mine as much as I'm yours. Understand?
I am yours,
he agrees.
Completely and fully.
Then I can be yours, too. He leans down and kisses me gently on the lips.
My mate, my Liz, you are my everything.
Yep. Definitely hard to stay mad at that. We end up lazing about in bed for a few more hours, making love a few more times, and napping. To his credit, he promises to be more understanding about the hunting. All the while, he caresses my abdomen when he thinks I'm not paying attention. I've never particularly thought about being someone's mom, but it's clear that to Rahash, me and this baby are everything. And it makes me wonder what his life is like back at the caves. Vectol made it sound like everyone was all happy-go-lucky in igloos or some shit, but maybe it's lonelier than I think for someone like Rahash, who has scars and sucks with people skills. The fact that he was a big old virgin tells me that with the few ladies in the tribe, they weren't exactly banging down his door for his dick, no matter how magnificent his equipment is. And it's weird, but I'm kind of glad he's all mine. There's no chick waiting for him back at home, no ex-girlfriends I might have to confront. He's just... mine. It's like he's always been waiting for me. So I guess I won't go hunting alone if it really gets his panties in a wad. But by the time we're hungry for dinner, I balk at the thought of more of the dry, tasteless smoked meat. You can come with me, I cajole Rahash. We can check the traps and have something fresh and tasty to eat. Wouldn't that be nice? I tap my stomach. And fresh food is better if I'm truly pregnant. He grunts a response and puts on his loincloth, so I suppose that means we're going out. It's odd, but I'm excited to get out in the fresh air and tromp through the snow. I like seeing what's wandered into my traps. And I'm really craving fresh, raw meat. Weird, I know. We bank the fire, straighten up the cave, and then head out, dressed and armed for a trek. The weather's overcast, and it looks like it could snow again. Big surprise there. It snows every damn day. While Rahash was recovering, I pulled two more of the ugly spearfish things from the water and made two bows and a whole slew of arrows. I even managed a couple of makeshift quivers with some extra pelts. I'm a regular Daniel Boone around here. It's strange. I remember hunting with my father when I was a girl and never thought anything of it. Now that I'm out on my own with Rahash, I'm remembering things I've forgotten, and more than that, I'm enjoying myself. I never thought of myself as the outdoorsy type, but there's nothing more satisfying than letting a well-made arrow fly into a kill. Well, okay, sex with Rahash is more satisfying. Hunting is a close second. Rahash hovers a bit as we go tromping through the snow, until I slap his hands away when he tries to help me through a particularly deep patch of snow. His lips quirk with amusement when I shoot him a pissy look, and I realize he's baiting me. Dick? He's so getting it tonight when we get back to the cave. As we check the traps, I mentally think of ways I can sexually torture my alien. Withholdings off the table. That would be punishing me as well as him. Maybe a nice, languid blowjob, and I won't let him come. Ho! Calls a voice from a distance, the sound faint on the blowing wind. I look over at Rahash in surprise. Was that English? Am I imagining things? He stills and then scans the horizon. Immediately he grabs my arm and begins to hustle me back from where we came. Hurry, Liz. Wait, what are we running from? I ready my bow as we slog through the snow. Is it more Metlax?
Rahash!
A voice calls out, and then says some words I don't understand. I gasp. Are those your people? I stop and turn, shielding my eyes from the overcast skies to see if I can make out who is there.
Back to the cave.
Rahash growls, and he stumbles in the snow. My heart skitters in my chest, and I tug on his arm. Playing around in bed is a different sort of activity than slogging through heavy snow, and I worry he's overextending himself. Just last week he had a broken leg. Rahash, wait! Don't hurt yourself! He grabs the fur of my heavy cloak and hauls me against him. It takes me a moment for me to realize that he's picking me up and carrying me away. He's going to try and outrun them? Rahash, wait!
They will not take you from me, Liz,
he says fiercely.
You are mine, my mate.
They can't take me, I say soothingly, trying to pet his shoulder. I'm worried he's going to hurt himself. Rahash, please, you're scaring me. That stops him in his desperate treading. He stops in the snow and gently sets me down again. His hand touches my stomach, and then he cups my face in his hands.
You are my everything, Liz,
he murmurs before kissing me. I know, I say, confused.
Rahash, human called Liege.
Two voices and new ones.
Do not run.
We've been found. Rahash closes his eyes and holds me against him, gripping his knife. It worries me. I place my hand over his, a silent request not to attack. And we wait. Part 5. Liz. Two men approach in the snow, spears in hand. They're not running, and the spears are used more as walking sticks, so I'm not too worried. Yet. But Rahash? Rahash is beside himself.
Human called Liege.
One of them yells again, his hand cupped to his mouth.
Wait there!
I give Rahash an uncertain look. There is defeat written all over his proud features, and that concerns me. I slide my hand into his to reassure him, and he squeezes it tightly, then pulls me against him in a possessive hug. Who are they? I ask him.
Ihako and Hayden,
Rahash replies. There's a toneless quality to his voice that I don't like. Friends of yours? He grunts. Ah, he's unhappy because they've come to take us back to the tribe and I'm not knocked up and starry-eyed with love. Theoretically, anyhow. I pat his back and then rub it. You knew they'd come after you at some point, right? I mean, from what it sounds like, you ran off with the cookie jar and all. His hand strokes my braids. He doesn't move, but I can feel the tension growing as the others approach. They slog through the waist-high snow as if it's no big deal. One is smiling as they approach, and he's got a friendly, open look to his face that's nice. His features are blunter than Rahash's blade-like ones, but his expression of good cheer makes him that much more handsome. Unlike Vektal and Rahash, his hair is short, buzzed close to his scalp. It makes his big, arching horns look that much more prominent. He's a slaty sort of blue all over, and while not as tall as Rahash, he's got arms like friggin' tree trunks. Earth trees, not the not-Hoth trees. The other alien with him looks decidedly less friendly. He's got the same charm school glower that Rahash does, but that's where the similarities end. He's a pale milky blue, almost as muscled as the one at his side, and has a strong nose and square jaw that makes him look pissy as hell. His hair is shaved on the sides, and the long crest on top is braided and falls on his back. They're both wearing simple leather tunics and pants, and armed to the teeth. Not a friendly hello, then.
Rahash, we've been looking everywhere for you.
The friendly one moves forward to clap Rahash on the back, but Rahash bares his teeth and glares at him, pulling me behind him. The newcomer looks surprised at this reaction.
You knew we'd be out. Vektal sent us after you the moment we didn't resonate.
He claps a hand to his heart and pretends to be grieved. The other one has no expression whatsoever. Hi, I'm Liz, I say, stepping out from behind Rahash and offering my hand. They look at me like I'm crazy, and the unfriendly one pulls his spear back. No, I'm not reaching for your weapons. This is a human greeting. I shake my hand with the air. You know, like an introduction? Rahash grabs me and pulls me back before they can examine my hand more closely.
She is my mate,
he grits out.
We resonate for each other. There is nothing to discuss.
I smack a hand on Rahash's arms because now I'm getting annoyed. If you're done being an utter Neanderthal, I can speak for myself, thank you. The newcomers exchange a look.
I am called Ihako,
says the friendly one. He gestures at his buddy.
This is Hayden.
Ihako smiles down at me.
You are Liz.
It's a short I, actually. Liz. I correct his pronunciation.
It does not matter,
Rahash says and tries to pull me back again.
They should refer to you as Rahash's mate.
I frown at this. Hold the fuck up. I don't get my own identity anymore?
You do,
Ihako assures me.
He's simply being overprotective. It happens with every resonance.
He looks nonplussed, but I see a sneer cross Hayden's face. Hayden lifts his chin.
Just like your father, I see. Ignoring the rules as you see fit. Impulsive, headstrong, and foolish. You are your father's son.
It's clearly not a compliment. Rahash bristles visibly. His mouth curls and I see a flash of his teeth.
I did not wish for my story to end like yours.
Hayden snarls and lunges for Rahash, knocking him backward into the snow. I scream as the men push me aside. Ihako pushing his way forward to break the two men apart. I stumble backward, falling on my ass into the snow. Rahash snarls again, and then, the next thing I know, he's pushed both of the men aside and is tenderly helping me to my feet. He pulls me against his chest once more and strokes my braids, and I can hear the hammer of his heart in his big chest. Simply being protective is perhaps an understatement. I'm fine, I say, patting him on the arm. I just don't understand what is going on.
Get your things, Ihako says in a careful voice.
He scans the skies.
We have a few hours before the suns go down, and we can get started back to the tribal cave. Rokan says there will be a storm coming in a few days, and you know he is never wrong.
I look to Rahash. He touches my chin, the look on his face thoughtful.
Do not make this harder, Hayden warns.
Rahash just strokes my jaw.
We'll go with you.
It takes about an hour to get back to the small, cozy cave that Rahash and I have called home for the last while. Ihako's the only one that talks, carrying on a cheerful monologue. Rahash is silent, and Hayden is too. I'm quiet because I'm watching all three of them trying to determine my place. Fact is, they're aliens. Their culture is different from mine, and what may seem innocent on the surface might end up being a big problem later. So I'm watchful, and I try to absorb everything. To their credit, they speak English as we go, so I don't feel left out. Ihako expresses surprise at the sight of our cave, and claps Rahash on the back for setting himself up such a cozy place right under their noses. Rahash doesn't look pleased, though. He's pretty good at keeping his emotions under wraps, but I can sense his anger and frustration.
What is this?
Ihako asks and holds up my bow. It's a weapon, I tell him, slinging it over my shoulder as we pack our things. I make sure I have it and the quiver full of bow and arrows. I use it for hunting.
Hunting?
His brows draw together.
But you are female. You should not be hunting.
Did I take a wrong turn and land on planet Chauvinist? I ask. I can fucking hunt. What, you think wild animals are going to be so enamored of my lady parts that I'm going to lure them like some Pied Piper of pussy? What? Rahash puts a calming hand on my shoulder.
The women of my tribe do not hunt, remember. They are too few in number.
I snort. We'll see about that shit. You're not exactly outnumbered 3-1 anymore. And I make a big show of adjusting my bow on my shoulder, glaring at Ihako and Hayden. Ihako just looks amused. We clean out our small cave of extra food and blankets and pack up our water skins. I roll up the extra pelts, and when the cave is in order, I give it one last look around. I feel a twinge of sadness that we're leaving. I'm looking forward to seeing Georgie and Kira and my fellow humans again, but I have to admit staying in this cave was kind of nice, cozy, private. And I kind of liked being here with Rahash. The big jerk's growing on me. Just when I get settled, we're moving again. I'm craving someplace to call home. But then Rahash takes my hand, and the feeling of loss disappears. Instead of feeling uprooted, I just feel vaguely annoyed that our little idol is interrupted just when things were getting super sexy. Cock-blocked by the aliens. Damn it. We walk in the direction of the setting suns for a time. I'd say it's west, except that's how it is on Earth, and this place is most definitely not Earth. When the skies turn pink in a washed-out orange, we head for a small copse and make camp. Ihako has been picking up dung chips as we walk and has a bag full of them for fuel. It's probably a good thing I didn't shake his hand. We bunk down for the night around a campfire, and Hayden immediately stalks off to the ridge nearby and says he's on first watch. Works for me. He's not exactly a ball of fun, and I've got Rahash if I want to hang out with someone quietly seething. As I settle in near the fire and wrap my fur cloak around me, Rahash grabs his spear and leans down to kiss the top of my head.
I will find some fresh meat for you.
Oh, but I watch him leave the small camp, and then it's just me and Ihako, who's feeding another dung chip into the fire. I frown at him. You're not going to go chasing after him?
Why?
Ihako shrugs easily.
He will return. You are here.
Ah, so it's not Rahash that's the hostage. It's me. Gotcha. He's right, though. As long as I'm here, Rahash will return. Just the thought of that kind of gives me the warm fuzzies. Whatever else happens, Rahash has my back. I'm determined to do the same for him. But my feet hurt, and it's nice to sit by the fire, even if it's cold outside and there's no shelter from the elements. I scoot a little closer to it and prop up my wet, booted feet so they can dry a bit. Tell me how the others are doing. Are they all well?
Healthy as can be,
Ihako reassures me, and a big smile splits his face. Despite the situation, I like the guy. I think it'd be impossible not to.
Your friends have brought much joy to our people, he says. For a long time, we thought a mate was a dream, and it is now a dream possible for many.
His words make me wish Rahash was here. I scan the trees, but my mate, I'm still coming to terms with the whole situation, is blowing off steam by slaughtering dinner. That's nice.
We are all squeezed into our caves like quill beasts in a snowstorm, but no one is complaining.
Did anyone, you know, get a vibrating cootie?
Resonate?
Yeah, that's the word. I'm sure Rahash has said it to me before, but he also says things like, mine, 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 and your cunt is full of my seed, so I sort of have to pick my words carefully around this guy. Did anyone else resonate?
Oh, yes.
He stirs the fire.
Georgie, you know of course. Pashov and Stacy resonated for each other right away. I think before her Kui was even inside her. I am surprised you did not hear it.
He chuckles. I say again, because my memories of that night are of me saying no to the cootie and Rahash stepping on me to hold me down and forcing me to absorb it. That was not the big guy's best moment. My betraying cootie purrs at the thought of Rahash, though, and I rub my chest absently. I don't remember Stacy all that well. Is she the weepy one?
She cries some, but less now that Pashov is there to dry her tears.
He grins and sits back to relax.
The one that weeps the most is Ariana. She is Zolaya's mate. He is much beleaguered by her tears.
Yeah, I imagine this is all pretty new to her.
Were the only ones that resonated the girls from the tubes? What about Josie, or Kira, or Tiff? He shakes his head.
No resonance yet for them.
Oh.
They are young, he says. There are many years ahead of them. Plenty of time to resonate to the right man.
Mm-hmm. And no mate for you? He sighs, and for the first time his laughing smile falters a little.
No mate and family for me yet. Plenty of time for me as well.
But he looks wistful.
Marlene and Zenik, too. And Nora and Dagesh.
Dagesh has a weird name. The way it is said, it's almost like the middle syllable is swallowed and chewed up again. It's definitely not a human sound. So I just say, good for them. I hope they are happy.
Some are adjusting, but the entire tribe is pleased. Many new couples and dens created. Soon there will be many kits running around.
He stretches his legs and then flops on his side in the snow, then props up his chin with his hand.
So many new matings means new quarters for the new families.
Oh?
No one wants to hear their quees resonate all night, he says with a wicked grin.
I feel myself blushing. I suspect that's not the only thing they hear all night. Sounds like everyone's got a cozy setup.
Cozy for the new couples. Hayden and I volunteered to come after you two. It's too crowded for a lot of the men. All the hunters are spending much time out on treks. They say it is for the extra mouths to feed, but it is also because it is cramped quarters for those that do not have a family.
He shrugs.
It's not a problem we thought we would have again.
Again? Mihako nods and his cheery grin disappears.
Our tribe was larger before. We had many matings, many families. It was a good time for the Sakui. But 15 years ago there was a Kui sickness that swept through the caves. Many died.
He picks at the snow in front of him.
There was not a den that was not affected by the Kui sickness. So many lost mothers, fathers, mates.
He sits up abruptly and I see Hayden stalk past the edge of the trees. I open my mouth to speak, and Ihako gives a small shake of his head, a meaningful look cast Hayden's way. Ah, so Hayden's sensitive about that subject. Got it. What about Rahash's family? I ask. It's the first time I've actually thought that Rahash might have a family waiting for him back home. He hasn't mentioned one. Is it that he doesn't want to talk about them? Or is it that he lost them in the Kui sickness like I assume Hayden did? Ihako glances around and leans in.
Did he not tell you of his family?
I shift forward, lowering my voice. We're gossiping, but this is gossip I need, so I don't care. He hasn't said anything. Are they at the cave, or dead?
Long dead, Ihako says in a low voice. His situation was an interesting one.
I move a little closer. I like interesting. Plus, I really, really want to know. I want to understand what makes my Rahash tick. Weird that I'm starting to think of him as my Rahash now.
His mother, Daya, never liked his father. Vashon was not a very patient man, and Daya was in love with someone else. But when the Kui chooses, it chooses. He shrugs. Rahash was their child, and when he was 5, his mother resonated for his father anew. That meant another child. She insisted she did not want his kid, refused to have anything to do with him. She even went to the chief. At that time, it was Vektal's father.
Ihako rubs his jaw and looks troubled.
The chief declared that she could have his child because resonance cannot be avoided. But she did not have to live with him.
This made Vishan furious. He lost his temper and kidnapped her away from the tribe. He took her and Rahash away and did not return. We looked for them for many years, but no one found them. It was as if they had disappeared. Then, after the Kui sickness had killed many, Vishan returned with only Rahash, and Rahash covered in scars as you see him now. We asked him where Daya and his child were, but he said they were dead, killed by Metlax. Vishan's choice to take Daya away and force her to give in to the Resonance, to become his mate even though she did not want to, it cost her life and that of her kit, and so the chief punished him with exile. Rahash was left with the tribe so he could grow up in safety.
My heart aches at this story. It's an awful one, and it explains a little as to why he's so worried he's going to lose me. Poor Rahash.
Ihako nods thoughtfully. He went looking for Vishan some years later when he was old enough to hunt on his own. He never found him, but he said he did find some old leathers eaten by animals and the old cave destroyed. Whatever was left of Vishan is long gone.
Oh, Rahash. I think of his mother and the baby, dead. His father's misery. How had that affected such a small child? No wonder he is so desperate to keep me, even if it means pissing off his tribe. It's the only way he can think to react after his parents' example. It's such a sad story. I lost my mother when I was very young, but I had my father, and I always, always felt loved until the day he died. To have such family strife and then lose both like that made my heart break for my alien. This is why he was so possessive, so resolute in his desire to keep me hidden away. Suddenly I want to comfort him and let him know that he's got me, that I'm his and he's mine. Cootie or not, I'm having feelings for the big guy, and he's made life here on this strange planet interesting. The conversation with Ihako dies, and the alien returns to stirring the fire. I sit by it with my legs crossed, lost in thought until Rahash returns. He's got a quill in hand, and judging from the arrow sticking out of the quill beast, he used the bow I made for him. He must have watched me use it and figured it out from there. Wow. The wide smile I give him in greeting is genuine, and I get up to greet him with kisses. He's a little dazzled by my enthusiastic greeting, but puts his arm around me and nuzzles me close. And when he cuts open the quill, he makes sure I get the tastiest bits and feeds them to me, and won't give the others or himself a bite until I'm good and full. And really, it's not the worst thing to be the center of someone's universe. I'm kind of digging it. And I plan on showing him my appreciation.
Rahash. Liz's good mood makes me wary. It's a pleasure to see, of course, but I can't help but wonder if my devious mate is up to something. She usually greets me with caustic words and grumpiness, but now that Ihako and Hayden are here, she is all smiles and reaches for me when I walk toward her. I am not pleased to see the two men. They are good men, but the truth is that I would keep Liz to myself for at least a few more turns of the moons, so when we returned to my people it would be clear that we are a family and we must be together. Now I am not sure what they will think. I have broken the laws of our tribe, and Liz's belly is still flat with no sign of our child. My only consolation is that she smiles at me and her hands reach for me when I am near. It is clear that we are mates, and I can see the envy in both Ihako and Haydn's eyes. They did not resonate. For them, life goes on cold and mateless, but with the added agony of seeing so many others find their joy. For the first time, I am the envied one. It is an unusual feeling. The evening is a quiet one. Ihako talks easily, but he's always been a cheerful one. His conversations about hunting and life back at the caves hold Liz's interest, but her hand is locked in mine. Haydn is silent, but he watches every time Liz touches me or brushes her arm against mine. As the hour grows late, Liz yawns and puts her cheek on my arm. "Can we go to bed now, baby?" She is calling me the love word of her people. My heart swells and my cui begins a soft resonance in my chest. "Of course." I stand up and pull her to her feet. Haydn stands as well. "She should stay here, near the fire, with us." Before I can snarl a protest, Liz snorts, "We're resonating, remember?" She taps her chest and I can hear her cui singing a song to mine. "I thought the goal was that you wanted him to impregnate me so you can have more blue babies running around, right?" Haydn's jaw clenches. "We are protecting you. From his jizz?" A little smile curves Liz's pink mouth. Bit late for that. Now, I'm gonna go sleep with my mate. She takes my hand and leads me a short distance away from the fire, near some bushes. With a yawn, she shrugs her cloak off, and then gestures at the pack on my back. Blankets, please. Wordless, I obey. I make a bed full of furs for her, since I know my human can only take so much cold. Even now, she shivers amidst her yawns. When the bed is as perfect as I can get it, I take the cloak from her hands and bundle it around her shoulders. You must stay warm. Oh, I'm going to stay warm, she says with a soft smile. We're going to snuggle. I look over at the fire a short distance away. Ihako and Haydn are watching us. I'm not sure if snuggling is a good idea. Already I am resonating for my mate, and my cock is beginning to strain against my loincloth. Perhaps I should sleep by the fire. Fuck that noise, she says sleepily. She gets down onto the furs, stretches out, and then pets the spot next to her. Come on, I'll make it good for you. Those are sex words. My body reacts even as I glance back at the fire again. She must not mean what she is saying. The humans are modest, from what Vectalis said. Georgie didn't want his touch when others were around. It is just more human chatter. Brr, she says and chatters her teeth. So cold. I need my big alien to squeeze up against. I cannot refuse such a call from my mate. With one last look at the two men by the fire, I get down in the bed next to Liz, and she immediately burrows against me, her cold hands moving under my vest and pressing against my skin. I endure it stoically. I want her to be comfortable and warm. My arms go around her, holding her close, and I tuck her small head under my chin. My Kui sings a song of protest, but I am content. With Liz in my arms, the world outside does not matter at the moment. Hmm, Liz says softly, her hand stroking my chest. I caress her arm under the furs. Liz?
Yes, baby.
What is jizz? She giggles, and my cock gets even harder.
It's your seed.
I feel strangely embarrassed that she has said such things to the other males. She jokes about being protected from my seed. Your words are forward. I know, but they don't understand them, so it's cool, she says, and I can hear the smile in her voice. Her hand slides down my stomach and then cups my cock. There's no protecting a girl from this monster. My breath hisses out and I pull her hand away. Liz! I sit up and look between the spiky leaves of the bushes to where the fire flickers. Sure enough, they are watching us, though I doubt they can see more than our feet. I am sure they can hear Liz, though. My mate is not quiet. Lie down, she tells me, and presses a hand to my chest. They can hear you. So? Her hand goes to my cock again, and she drags her fingers over the length, then caresses my spur. Let them hear what they're missing out on. I swallow back a ragged groan. My Kui is resonating wildly in my breast, and Liz seems determined to play. And I am a weak man because I am going to let her. I reach for Liz, but she slides under the blankets. Let me make you feel good, she whispers, and I feel her tugging at the ties to my loincloth. Then the leather falls away, and I feel her hot little hand around my cock. I bite down on my hand to keep from moaning aloud. I don't want the others to know what pleasures I'm getting from my mate for fear that she'll stop. Because I'm selfish and greedy, but I want more of this. Her hand tightens around the base of my cock, and I feel her when she giggles, then rubs the head against her lips. God, you're so hard already. That's sexy, Rahash. Liz's lips close over my cock head, and I feel her tongue swirl over it. I nearly spill my seed right then. Instead, I bite down harder on my hand, determined to be silent so this lasts longer. My body arches, and I want to press further into her mouth, into that warm wet that reminds me of her cunt. Her tongue laps at my cock. So much pre-cum for me, she murmurs. Her hand grips and strokes at the root, and then her mouth seems to be everywhere, licking along my shaft, nibbling at the head, and then teasing and licking at my spur, which I never knew was sensitive until she played with it. I am beside myself with pleasure, and when she makes soft little noises of delight and her cui vibrates, it pleases me even more. Then her mouth clamps down on the head of my cock and starts sucking again. She takes me deeper, working my length down her tongue, until I can feel my cock butt up against the back of her throat. And her cui begins to vibrate even harder. It's like she's encouraging it, because it's so loud that I can feel it making her skin shiver, and I feel the vibrations of it against her tongue, even as she grips me in her throat. It is like nothing I have ever felt before. Even biting my hand cannot stifle my groan, and I come then, my seed spurting into her hot, wet mouth. She makes soft little noises of pleasure, and I feel her swallow even as she releases my cock, and she's drinking it. Drinking my seed like I drink from her sweet cunt. I groan again and my hands tug at her pants. I want to reciprocate. But she stops me with a little pat on my chest and a smack of her lips. It's okay, baby. I wasn't doing this because I wanted you to lick me. Her hand smooths down my chest. I just wanted to make you feel good. For you to know I'm with you. A little giggle escapes her throat. The sound sweet and musical. And for them to know I'm with you, too. Clever, Liz. She pleasures me with her mouth so the others can know she's with me willingly. My mate is devious and wonderful. I pull her against me, feeling my qui resonate in time with hers. You are everything to me, Liz, I say softly. My world. My heart. Is that a declaration of love? She asks sleepily, her voice muffled by my chest. I nod. My people normally do not declare love boldly, but I love Liz. She is mine and I am hers. I love you, Liz. Her soft sound of appreciation is all I get in response. I wonder, does she love me? Does it matter as long as she is my mate? For some reason, it does. Perhaps I'm not doing enough to please her. My hand goes to the waist of her leggings, and I push my fingers inside, seeking her cunt. She makes a sleepy sound of protest, and then her arms go around my neck and tighten as I find her third nipple. Her clit, she calls it. Then the breath hisses out of her throat. I guess I'm in the mood for some reciprocation after all, she says, and then gently bites at the base of my throat. Her cunt is soaked with honey, and I drag my fingers through her juicy folds, even as I knot my other hand in her hair and angle her mouth so I can kiss her and mate her tongue with mine. She whimpers again, the sound louder, and I muffle it with my lips. Surely the others can guess what we are doing, but Liz's cries of pleasure are mine alone. I slide a finger deep inside her and begin to thrust, mimicking my cock. Her hips raise and she murmurs against my throat. My clit, she says over and over again, and I realize she wants me to touch it, even as I pump into her with my hand. I angle my thumb over it and brush the nub of it while thrusting my finger into her, and she cries out loudly. This time there is no muffling that. I hear a low comment by the fire and then the sound of someone walking away, further from the camp. Good, I think savagely, as I pleasure my mate. When she comes, she does it with little shivers and soft cries, her body tensing against mine and a flood of honey between her legs. I dip my fingers into all that sweetness before I pull them from her leggings and then lick my hand clean of her taste. Filthy barbarian, she murmurs with a chuckle, and then sighs, contented. Within moments, she's asleep against me, trusting, happy. I hold her close, savoring these moments, in case they don't last.
Liz. The tribal home cave doesn't look too impressive from the outside. In fact, the only way I know it's different from every other cliff we've passed is that Georgie flings herself out from the cave's mouth, arms outstretched and squealing happily at the sight of me. I'm surprised to see such an effusive greeting from her, but I extend my arms and allow her to jump all over me in a boisterous welcome. A moment later, Josie's right there, flinging her arms around me next, until I'm being swarmed by my fellow captives. It's strange to see everyone with the glowing blue eyes, though I know I must have them too. The glow in our eyes says we have a cootie, and everyone's healthy and happy-looking. Weirdly enough, I feel tears pricking. It's like I'm coming home, especially when Kira comes in and embraces me in a long, silent hug. She and I have known each other the longest, and seeing her is like seeing a sister. I burst into tears at that and blubber for a moment, sniffling and happy to see all of them. I touch Kira's ear where the shell-like translator is still attached. Hanging onto your accessories, I tease, happy. It's not so easy to remove, she says with a soft smile on her solemn face, and then steps away to allow Tiffany to hug me. As Kira steps away, I see Ihako move toward her, opening his arms for a hug. No greeting for me, Sad Eyes. Kira blushes and waves him off. How are you? Georgie asks, pulling me by the arm and tugging me into the cave. Are you all right? Have you guys been okay? Did Rahash hurt you? I look back at Rahash as I'm being carried away on a tide of happy human women. He's standing back with Ihako and Hayden, and the narrow-eyed look has returned to his face, but for a moment I think he looks lost, miserable. Rahash has been wonderful to me, I say loudly. I blow him a kiss from afar and then let Georgie and Tiffany drag me inside the caves. The home caves aren't what I'm expecting. I guess I was thinking it'd be something super primitive, much like the cave I shared with Rahash, but the cave itself looks like the hollowed-out inside of a donut. If this isn't man-made, I'll eat my leather shirt. The doors to each individual cave are perfectly rounded, a leather curtain drawn over the entrance. The center of the cave is warm and almost humid, and there's a bright blue pool of water in the center that smells faintly of sulfur. A baby alien with tiny horns and bright blue skin splashes on the steps, clinging to what must be a female alien. She's tall and brawny and just as covered in bumpy plates as Rahash and the men are, which looks almost overwhelming on her female face. It's weird because there are people everywhere, and I'm quickly overwhelmed by the sensation of crowding. There's more people playing near the water and some ones weaving baskets in the distance. I hear the chatter of many voices, and everywhere I look, there are people. I see the freckled girl from the tubes leaning over a stew pot as someone tries to instruct her on how to cook. Over off to one side, the weepy one, Ariana, is cuddled in the lap of another alien. She doesn't look all that weepy to me. Wow, this is so... I pause, unable to think of a snappy comeback for once. It's great, isn't it? Georgie's arm goes around my waist. They've really made room for us here. The hunters have been going out and spending a lot more time on the trails because there's so many more mouths to feed. And Kashrem's tanning all the hides he can because he needs the leather for us, and they've given us caves, and it's all so wonderful. Georgie gushes as she leads me inside. It's nice of them, but all I see are people everywhere. A lot of people. It's a nice living space, but it's also noisy with laughter. I kind of miss my quiet cave with Rahash. It is primitive, but cozy. It's not like there's exactly a shopping mall here anyhow. Fact is, my life changed completely and utterly the day that the little green men kidnapped me from my apartment and stole me into outer space. Georgie steers me through the caverns, smiling at people as they find an excuse to come out and stare. I guess Rahash's kidnapping of me is pretty scandalous, though I'm getting annoyed with all the whispering. He did what he had to do, and I don't regret it. I'm guessing we're going to be grist for the gossip mill for a while, though. It's such a small community that I'm sure everyone's going to be in our business. I look for Rahash, but he's not around. Vectol's ahead, talking to a pair of elderly aliens with long white hair and frowns on their faces. Vectol looks over at Georgie and me and nods. Come on, Georgie says, steering me into a side cave. Let's get you checked out by the healer. I'm fine, I protest, but Georgie's stubborn. She won't take no for an answer, so I give up and let her lead me into one of the covered grottos. There's a woman inside, one of the tall, strong-looking alien women. She has curling horns and long, flowing dark hair. Her belly is round and obviously pregnant, and her eyes glow brightly in her face. She says something in the alien tongue, her voice sweet. I shake my head. I don't speak Navi. Georgie snickers and bats my arm. Be nice, Liz. This is Malak. She's the tribe's healer. Howdy, I say. Malak puts her hands out and smiles at me. Liege? Close enough. I put my hands in hers. But tell her, Georgie, that I feel fine. Rahash took really good care of me. He's great. Georgie's brows draw together as if she doesn't quite believe me. He kidnapped you, Liz. You don't have to defend him. Dude, the little green men kidnapped me too, and you don't see me singing their praises. I give Malak's hand another squeeze. I'm telling you, Rahash is fine. We're all mated and shit. So go on and tell the healer that I'm cool. I love Georgie for saving us, but I'm starting to get annoyed that no one seems to believe me when I say I'm fine with Rahash. When she hesitates again, I say, do I look like I've been browbeaten into submission? She chuckles. I think you would talk anyone to death that tried. Exactly. Georgie looks over at Malak and speaks the fluid alien language. I watch their faces as they speak, but I'm unhappy that I don't know the words. Georgie knows them because she got an info dump from the spaceship crashed somewhere around here that Rahash's people came from. Rahash can speak English for the same reason, but I haven't had the info dump, so I'm out of the loop. And I'm not a fan of being out of the loop. Malak says something, then Georgie relates it. She's going to speak to your Kui and see how you are doing. Super. Tell it I said hello, and he's a little bastard. Georgie grins and gestures for Malak to begin. The alien closes her eyes and hums, and for a terribly corny minute, I think she's going to start chanting Om. But her eyes begin to glow even brighter, so bright that I can see the glow behind her eyelids, and my cootie starts to react. It's not singing or purring like it does when Rahash comes home, but it's almost like it's talking to her. I feel it twisting inside me, and then it almost dances. It's creeping me out. She continues to hold my hands, and I feel my cootie moving and vibrating in response. It's a different kind of vibration, higher and more rapid than when it's sexy time with Rahash. I try to pull my hands from hers. It's all right, Liz. She's just checking stuff out inside you. I promise it's fine. Georgie puts her hand on my arm. Malak opens her eyes and my cootie stops vibrating. It slows to a faint hum and then ends and the healer exhales slowly. Then she smiles and releases my hands. Weirdly enough, I feel better. I didn't feel bad before, but I feel rejuvenated, like I just had an hour-long massage on the inside. Malak begins to speak and Georgie translates. She says you have a bit of exhaustion, that it's normal for the humans because we're all still acclimating to the climate and having a quee, but for you to take it easy. I'm not surprised. I've been taking care of Rahash since he fell and broke his leg. My eyes widen and I clutch at Georgie's hands. Oh, tell her she needs to check out Rahash. He hurt himself a while ago and took some time to recover. She needs to check him over to make sure he's okay. Georgie looks at Malak and speaks, and a small, unhappy frown crosses Malak's face. She says something, and Georgie argues back with her. What are you guys saying? I ask when they ignore me. It's complicated, Georgie says. I'll tell you later. Malak continues to speak, and she gestures at my stomach. Georgie breaks out into a smile and looks at me. Let me guess, I say before she can translate. I've got a bun in the oven. Her eyes widen. You knew? I shake like a vibrator tucked inside me every time Rahash gets near, I say in a dry voice. We might have banged a few times without protection. A few? She chuckles. Okay, a few times a day. But seriously, that's what the cootie's about, right? So I'm not surprised. I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm not shocked. She gives me a sympathetic look. Not sure how you feel about it because it's Rahash's? No. Dang, why does everyone think I hate the guy? Not sure how I feel about it because I'm not sure I wanted to be a mommy, and I'm kinda young. I'm only 22. You're only 22. We're all only 22, and now we're going to be having kids if the cooties have their way. Georgie's hand goes to her stomach. I'm pregnant, too. I look over at the silent waiting healer. Is she sure? How do we know it's not just gas or something? Maybe the alien food makes our colons explode. First of all, gross. Second of all, she knows. She's the healer. Georgie looks at Malak and says something, and Malak gestures at her chest, speaking more fluid syllables. I really need to visit the alien ship and get the info dump because I'm tired of people talking around me already. Georgie nods and then looks at me, translating. She says she can feel the changes in your womb. Your queen knows it's there. Then why does the damn thing still vibrate all the time when I'm around Rahash? Georgie's mouth curls in a slight smirk. Because you're turned on? I imagine it likes sex endorphins as much as the rest of us. Girl has a point. I exhale, staring at the cave walls. So, I'm pregnant. Me too. You're not alone, she smiles. Vic'tal is so excited. I imagine the excitement on Rahash's face when I tell him that there's a baby blue alien in my stomach. I touch my belly. He's going to be happy but terrified. I remember the story of his parents. That won't be us. I promise baby blue that it won't. I look at Georgie. Rahash is pretty excited about the whole resonating thing, too. He really wants a family. Her smile fades a little. Did he hurt you? I shake my head. He came on a little strong a few times, but I had things under control. When we finally got together, it was my call and not his. Well, it was the cootie's call, but I don't point that out. I sense that Georgie might not listen. She's utterly crazy about Vec'tal the way I am about Rahash, and I'm going to defend him, even if it puts us on opposing viewpoints. Because for some reason, I'm feeling mighty defensive. Something about all of this feels wrong, and I can't put my finger on what it is. What Georgie says next floors me, though. Settle in for a long wait, though. It seems their ladies carry for 3 years or so. The breath explodes from me. What the fuck? I'm appalled.